These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
I'm John Batchelor with John Bolton, former ambassador to the United Nations, former national security advisor, writing in The Telegraph, that's London reporting, about the word ceasefire and what needs to be watched very carefully when you plunge yourself into committing to a ceasefire. Ceasefire plus negotiations and peacekeepers. We've heard these words for years, John. They're usually associated with blue helmets. My experience with blue helmets in the Middle East is that when the blue helmets come in, the enemy takes advantage. Is that the same for the word ceasefire?
Well, I think it's a risk for Ukraine. And, we are all talking about these negotiations that are about to start. And there's a kind of implicit premise in what everybody's saying, that when negotiations are about to start, there will be a ceasefire on the battlefield, presumably along the existing front lines. That presumption, I think, is misguided in the case of Ukraine and potentially dangerous for the Ukrainians and therefore for us. And the reason for that is that with the circumstances here of an unprovoked Russian aggression, an invasion of Ukraine, first in 2014 and then expanded in 2022, if you have a ceasefire and negotiations turn out to be protracted, that ceasefire line could become a new Ukrainian-Russian border. And that would, in effect, give Putin really doubling the amount of Ukrainian territory that would be under Russian control. It could become a new de facto border that gets very hard to change over time. Now, it's certainly, while it's commonplace to have a ceasefire while negotiations start, it's not invariably what happens. During the World War II and the Chinese Civil War, the Chinese communists held negotiations with Chiang Kai-shek and the real government of China under a doctrine they call fight, 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 talk, talk, talk. It proved very successful for the Chinese communists, really disadvantageous in the extreme for Chiang Kai-shek. So it's not a certainty one way or the other what's going to be in somebody's interest, but it has to be thought through. And I think as the party here whose territory has been stolen by this aggression, it's not necessarily at all in Ukraine's interest to agree to a ceasefire that will leave that territory under Russian control.
You report that peacekeeping operations in other parts of the world, you point to Cyprus, for example, usually involve separating the combatants. Are we anticipating that because they're jammed up against each other? Some towns are almost 90% surrounded by the Russians. Are they going to withdraw? Is that what a ceasefire is going to look like?
Well, no, nobody's willing to say that. They haven't thought it through enough. But these are very critical questions that you're raising that could, even though they seem like merely interim temporary arrangements, these kinds of things have a way of being frozen in time. So Ukrainian withdrawals from their own territory to help create a demilitarized zone are just protecting the Russian aggression. The way that the peacekeeping force operates is also extremely important. And again, not well defined by the Europeans in particular, who keep calling for peacekeepers. What is the mission of the peacekeeping force? Will it be, as your example was, simply to separate the parties? Or are they there to enforce the ceasefire, to have consequences for anybody who violates it? And this gets into what military people call the rules of engagement. Will it be the rules of engagement for this international force to preserve the ceasefire, to use force in aid of their mission of keeping the peace? Or will they be more like the kinds of UN peacekeepers you've described, who are allowed to use force only in self-defense, so that if one party to a ceasefire violates it, the UN people note it, they observe it, but basically they just wave as the offending party continues its military action. These are critical questions. If you're a potential troop contributor, are you contributing fighting troops who you fully expect may have to go into combat to preserve the ceasefire? Or are you simply talking about military observers who, of course, can defend themselves, but not anything more than that?
My experience with peacekeepers, the first time I saw what you'd have to say is a risk, is the finger of Israel, the north, poking into Baca Valley. There was the UN flag, and right behind it was the Hezbollah flag. And they were within, you could throw a baseball between them. Now, that seemed to me at the time to be a catastrophe. It turned out to be. This is the beginning of this century, and we know the Lebanon War has happened several times since then. Is that what we're anticipating, John, that it'll make a mockery of supervision? The UN will be planted somewhere, or somebody like the UN without NATO permission will be planted there and has no power and will have no power whatsoever at the skullduggery around them?
Well, that could well be what happens. I mean, people have talked about NATO peacekeepers as if the Russians are just going to roll over and say, oh, yeah, sure, that's fine with us, as opposed to peacekeepers from countries that are not involved in the combat, from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Africa, Latin America, two very different kinds of things. And given the attitude of President Trump and being very inclined to align with the Kremlin on these questions, if Putin says, well, I don't want heavily armed peacekeepers. I want only observers with sidearms and nothing more than that. I'm not sure that the talk of a peacekeeping force is actually it's going to help keep the peace and is prepared to use force to stop violations of the ceasefire. I find that very unlikely. But having that peacekeeping force in the UN experience, as you mentioned, Cyprus and many others, freezes the conflict in place. So that, again, this helps ratify Russian control over 20% of Ukraine's territory, which is most certainly not in Ukraine's interest.
We just have a minute, John. Right now, it's unclear that the Russians want a ceasefire. I read that that would not suit them. They want to keep fighting while they negotiate. Does that sound like something they would try to do, fight and talk?
Well, I think they want to get the Ukrainians out of the small amount of Russian territory they still control. And that is their principal objective. They don't want to be forced to trade Russian territory for Ukrainian territory.
John Bolton, a former ambassador to the United Nations, former national security advisor, writing in the Telegraph about the word ceasefire, what is ahead of us, and writing in the National Review about the Trump administration's worldview.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.